And one of the things they were doing, they were making these indie media films about what was going on, but a lot of people didn't have ways to access that. And so what they did was they were projecting them on the wall, on the sides of buildings. And, you know, that way they could reach, you know, audiences that were didn't have television, that didn't have, you know, access to that news in other fashions. There was a very interesting statistic recently. NPR just did a piece about all the different movements around the world that are going on right now, you know, from Lebanon to Iraq to Iran to Bolivia to Chile. And the social scientists that they were interviewing said, in the last 20 years, the number of people's movements around the globe has more than doubled since what it was in the 1990s. And there's somewhere around 50 movements a year now, every single year in the last 20 years. Well, all of that really got its inspiration out of the anti-globalization movement that we saw in Seattle. There certainly were movements before and there'll be movements after, but the inspiration of that moment of the world coming together, which also spawned the World Social Forum movement, which began in the following January and continued for the past 18 years. I was at the 10th anniversary of Indie Media Seattle. And while I was there, I wrote an article which was printed in a newspaper in Madison, but I thought if you'd indulge me for 1 second, I would read a little bit out of it here. 10 years later, traveling to Seattle to cover this emerging anti-globalization movement was a core group of dedicated independent media activists. Some had been part of the Counter Media Center at the 1996 Chicago Democratic National Convention. Others came from various alternative media organizations like Free Speech TV, Community Radio, and the growing micro-broadcasting movement. And all stood on the shoulders of a grand tradition of alternative press services like Liberation News Service during the Vietnam War. And well before that, like Madison's own Progressive Magazine, which recently celebrated its 100th anniversary. That was 2009. A media revolution was created in Seattle using open publishing software developed in Australia, servers hosted locally, a space provided by a local progressive business people, and dozens of computers, mini disc recorders, and small video cameras purchased with donated funds. Using the tools of corporate globalization, inexpensive recording equipment, and high-speed internet, with a few easy lessons in how to format and post audio, video, and text, these citizen journalists were able to create a globalization from below, distributing news to a worldwide audience by and about the people most affected. That was Indie Media Seattle, and it was the legacy that that we are celebrating today on this 20th anniversary. I think very clear in those three films that we just saw. So what I'd like to do is open it up to questions and also stories. People who remember their experiences in Seattle, in Cancun, in Prague, in so many different Miami, Quebec City, so many of these different movements. I arrived in Seattle about not quite a week before November 30th, and I was there and watched the Indie Media Center being converted from this empty space. All these computers moved in, and then everything was pushed out of the way so there could be a dance party on that weekend preceding the beginning of the meetings, and then everything moved back into space and people got to work. I worked with the National Radio Project producing a program called Making Contact, and we did coverage of that whole week of events that was broadcast on satellite to community radio stations around the country. I think that material is still available on the internet somewhere today. So, stories, thoughts, questions, comments? The floor is open.
Renee, you said that you were there. Were you coming from Houston? If so, what was the Houston contingency like in Seattle?
I was a young anarchist in Houston. I wasn't really a media activist in 1999 yet, and we were going to go up in a station wagon my friend had, but it basically flaked, and so I took a bus up there, and as I often recall, on the way up there, like, nobody knew what WTO was or what it stood for, and on the way back, like, everyone did. Seattle was a life-changing experience for almost anyone who was there. I saw our country turn into a police state. Very radicalizing experience for me and for others from Houston. I was with a group called the Tejas Block, but we really kind of came together up there versus the band.
About what was going on. So they reserved this place called Benaroya Hall, and they were doing these
lectures and forums with all kinds of activists from all over the globe. So it was, again, as other people noticed, the first time really that people here in the United States got to understand what people in the Global South already knew very well, which is what this WTO was all about. Yeah.
I was in Seattle and I participated in with the Direct Action Network and the shutdown, and that was, as Jay was saying, it was for anybody who participated in that, was a, you know, a transformative, unforgettable experience. But I think it's also important to remember that part of what made Seattle so successful is you had a much broader constellation of groups there. And while the anarchist Direct Action Network component was the key thing that made the shutdown happen and all the magic that came out of that, having the labor unions there, having the mainstream environmentalists, the anti-sweatshop campaigners, having that broad unity was crucial, both because they brought, the labor unions brought the bulk of the people into the streets, the 30 or 40,000 labor union people, and they made the protests seem much more relatable to, I think, middle America. Like, you had steel workers from Illinois and bus drivers in Kansas or whatever it was, I know in the work we've done with the Independent in New York, and I can talk about this more tomorrow, I've always tried to keep in mind, like, the concept of a left that's as broad as possible, because it's only when there's, like, broad unity that we can really have the strength to move forward and win things. And it's one thing to have your own group, and that's great, but you have to
critical mass.
You need a critical mass, you're not really going to get anywhere. And so that was another thing that was so impressive about Seattle. It was the first time for me that I had seen this in the United States. And I think in Occupy we saw that kind of coalesce for a minute,
also in some of the climate strike actions in the last couple of months, too, the March walkout and then again the one in September.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, and you mentioned, labor and Direct Action Network and, anarchists, but there was also, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And there was, various groups of all ages and, political radicalism. From across the board, because I think people were correctly informed that what the WTO was doing did affect everybody across the board. It affected the people in the Global South, but it also affected people in rural Kansas.
To me, it was really interesting because the lockdown stuff was a lot of the Earth First activists, which is a movement that I was involved with and connected to, but had been massively alienated from labor.
Mm-hmm.
And had we had the Pacific Northwest or First community had been against labor, even though they had tried to build coalitions, and somehow all of a sudden, magically, this oppositional thing disappeared and we had the potential for a coalition.
By the way, in that scene in the showdown in Seattle where the steel workers dumped steel like the Boston Tea Party, they did go and fish all that out again, and that was also negotiated with the environmental groups, that they weren't just going to dump the steel, they were also going to pull it back so that it didn't pollute the water in Seattle. So, Danielle.
I would like to admit that I have not seen the film before, and I also didn't see the other film, because every time I attempted to look at footage of Seattle, I would have such panic attack. And so this is the first time, and I considered leaving the theater. It's been 20 fucking
Battle of Seattle live in Houston, thanks to Renee and Erica and this new technology, cell phones. You know, they went out there with these new toys in their pockets. I guess there might have still been payphones on the corners in Seattle at the time.
I bet neither of them have to have cell phones. I think you're off on that year. Iris and I watched that in the media clip. We were like, there's not a single person in there in that whole IMC except Amy Goodman.
I have a funny story about that. We had an arrangement at WRT with a local cell phone company, Cellular One, and they would let us use cell phones to cover elections at the time. So this is, you know, big clunky cell phone. And so they loaned me a cell phone to take out to Seattle. And so I was using it to do exactly the same thing, reporting back from the streets to the Indy Media Center in Madison, which was just starting up at the time through WYLU, the community television station. And I got back, and the guy from the Cellular One called me up and says, you know, you put a $1,000 bill on that cell phone. Because at the time it was like $1 a minute or something for cell phones. So there certainly were cell phones at that time, but they weren't in widespread.
There wasn't.
That the UE started doing their cross-border organizing with Mexico, and that came out of those alliances that were formed in Seattle as well.
The Argentina thing reminds me sort of of, and Anna's not here, but like the way that organizing started was Pablo and Pietro and the folks in Brazil had started doing some indie media organizing, and they reached out to us when the first World Social Forum was happening and sort of said, we're going to do a big thing and we're going to make this thing happen. And so a bunch of us went to Porto Alegre and set up a media center, and Toya went and got a pie and pied the leader of the Workers' Party. And then we took photos of it as in the media, and then sold the photos to the mainstream media that we used to make the money to pay for the rent of our space.
That's the answer to the question. How big money?
And
what
then,
kind of pie was it?
I think it was just whipped cream. And then this Canadian NGOs was preparing for the FTAA thing, and there was a meeting in Buenos Aires. And so somehow they had gotten some money to send some of the Canadian indie media folks down there and rent an apartment. And so several of us from the World Social Forum indie media folks went there and spent 3 months in Buenos Aires, a full year before the Argentine crisis, working with community radio stations and people. And that's why indie media was ready when they had the crisis, is because we had this and kind of done this weird attempt at building a coalition that was like difficult and complicated and half fell apart, but it ended up finding the people. And it was sort of this weird process of like discovering of it. And for I myself, neither one of us had spoke Spanish at the time. Like, so it was a matter of like learning the language and learning the organizing and learning the cross-border thing. And that was the, you know, the Brazil and the Argentina was the first for indie media centers in Latin America.
The film we watched at the end, that Rafael handed me, that video CD in Brazil when we were there, and that's why this looks like this. Like, you guys remember what video looked like on the internet in the day? That 15-minute film is 64 megabytes. Like, it's just nothing. And because there was this ethos of we need a dial-up Linux user in Brazil to be able to see this film without problems. So we just worked so hard to get them to be the tiniest child we possibly could. And
now
so
they look
weird
like
to look at them now and be like, oh, it's just horrible. I can't even
see it happen. So I remember I had two computers, like one just with an audio stream all day long going, and one where we were watching the news come up on the newswire, and it was stunning. And there had been one, a website version of this before, that was the J18, and in England, there was like a trial in July of almost the same software base, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
But there was like a trial with a Reclaim the Streets, or Carnival Against Capitalism.
There was a Reclaim the Streets thing.
Yeah.
That did some very in the media like stuff.
Yeah.
The summer before.
I think it was also active. So they were trying it. And we don't get to see that anymore because this guy went on now in a bit of paranoia in the middle of that, pulled the hard drive and smashed it with a hammer with the Wednesday. So we'll never get to see that. But so I had seen that one and I knew it was coming, but man, it was just shocking and unbelievable watching the flows of media happen so fast. And I couldn't believe how successful it was. It was just amazing. And I moved here shortly after that. And when you move to Texas, if you're a documentary maker like me, I the first month I moved here, I started making a film about the death penalty. Because you move here and you're like, what? We're murdering somebody every week? What? Is that really real? What? How's that a thing? And I was in Huntsville and I was filming interviews in the parking lot. And I went up to Renee, I'd never met her before, and interviewed her in the parking lot, and she said some crazy radical things to me. She said, I know for sure, she said, we're talking about the criminal justice system, she said, if there's no justice in the system, it's just criminal, and I think we need to burn this whole shit house down. And she said that on tape on my camera, and I was like, yeah. So I put the camera down, and she said, hey, we're starting to organize this independent media center, and you should get involved, and that's how I got involved. It hadn't started yet, and at that time, to have an indie media center, you needed a big protest. You couldn't just, like, it was event-based, right? So the Pacifica National Board meeting came here, and everybody was really angry at Pacifica, everybody was an exile, and we used the anger about Pacifica was our, when we asked to be a Houston indie media center, that's what how we got it. We got it for the Pacifica National Board meeting protest.
I thought you did.
I mean, for a while, it was just someone showed up on IRC and said, we're indie media someplace, and we would run a script to create a new site and then not record who they were or how to get a hold of them. So, like, the I was just moved to Boston right as the WTO protests happened, and we got back to Boston, and there was the biodevastation protest, so there was a big bio... And we knew that the A16 thing was coming in D.C., but so we used the Boston one for it. And we ended up in a squatted church in Somerville, Massachusetts, that like had nonprofits in it, but they'd all been kicked out because the church was condemned, and so we just moved into it. And like we just like started like created all these scripts and just did it. And then eventually people are like, hey, we should have a process and contact.
I was working on a proposal for the Independent Media Center, I think starting in September of 2019, and knowing that the project was coming up, and there were a number of people that were helping me, but we have versions of that up and down, and then Dan Merkel from Seattle said, well, we should try the Glazer Foundation because they were very interested. So there's a version. That's the version. I just gave a copy to Xenia. But it was for $68,000. It had like 400 groups and people that were going to work on it. And but it's like Glazer never gave us money. Because he had heard they were going to give some money away, and they ended up giving it to the group with the fund, the farm, and agriculture.
Farmers?
No, not farmers. No, it was the group that was organizing the actual protest for their website. There was money for a website, and they gave it to them, and they said they didn't think our proposal was enough. We ended up getting money, some from Free TV and some from Robin Lloyd, whose grandmother was the founder of Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. She's always been a loyal funder of PFISH. And but I think that website that Glazer funded only got like 3,000 hits the entire time. and I think they felt so embarrassed about turning our proposal down that we actually got a call from them asking, because I had said at some meeting that they, somebody from Glazer was asked, that we needed to have, to make immediate work, we needed the more international base. And so they asked if Deep Dish would be interested in re-granting to international. And I'm glad you mentioned Toya, because that we sent money to her. Somehow we got involved, we gave money to, we got a grant from Glazer to help international groups, so we gave money to Toya and then somebody in Argentina, and then Barcelona, Estrechos in India, and Africa, different convergences in Africa, but it was re-granting from the
one of the things. One of the things that whole story reminds me of is my current pet peeve about funding for media, which is that so many funders think of media only as something that covers the protests, not something that's part of the social movement. And I think what these films showed us tonight is that media is a part of the social movement.
I don't think Glazer has media. I think Glazer knows that, and I think the fact that they knew and trusted the people like this.
Well, did you mention the name of the forum, the whole...
IFG?
Yeah, what's it called?
International Forum on Globalization, I think that's what it
is. No, this was the Food and Agriculture, whatever.
FOIA, or no, not FOIA, of
anyway.
Institute for Food and Development Policy.
Yeah.
And then we have the Ruckus camp. The Indie Media partnered with Ruckus to do the Tech Tools Action Camp, which happened at the same time as a convergence in Canada, the G7 in Whistler or something like that.
What? You mean Kananaskis?
Yeah. And
that's in Alberta, I think.
Yeah,
Kananaskis.
But in terms of the tech side of it, that Ruckus camp was what spawned. That's where Rise Up was created, and that's where all the tech co-ops were created, and that's the point at which you can see the tech side of the movement really came together, and everybody got to know each other. At that, here it. A year after Seattle.
Okay. So as we're bringing up all of these stories, and hopefully this is being documented here, but this really is a history that needs to be written and shared. I know some pieces of it have, but it'd be a great project to try and pull it all together.
Something I've been struck by this month is I feel like the Seattle 20th anniversary is getting far more attention and reflection than the
that this weekend, this event is going on here in Houston. There's another event going on in Seattle and this past week in New York. And also in Brussels, the Our Media Conference has a whole section focusing on the 20th anniversary of Indie Media.
There's a nationwide Indie Media
I mean, I remember looking up from the computer because I was, that's all I was doing was, and I remember the tear gas, and I remember all of a sudden the media center got really crowded, and I remember it started smelling, and I remember everyone like pushing up against the doors. Like, this video was the first time I could see what was happening at the door. At the time, Matt was only maybe 15 feet away from the door. But you couldn't see anything that was going on. Yeah, it was really, really tense. And we thought they were just going to break, like, it felt to me like they were just going to break through and, like, arrest us all.
Yeah. Jeremy Scale and I were in there and went out the back door, the last people out the back door, and then into the alley, and there was nothing. And it was like the cops had totally forgotten that there was a back door.
As evidence that this event in Seattle touched a federal nerve, and just because of that report that Renee phoned in, we broadcast it live on our little pirate radio station. We had been on the air for over a year with no problems. We were doing a lot of public affairs. We weren't cussing. The FCC just basically left us alone. But the very next day, after Renee calls in and we broadcast it, and you're hearing the helicopters and almost smell the tear gas as it goes on. They busted us. Six Harris County sheriff with the FCC, a couple of FCC guys, so the voice that launched the half a dozen police cars.
Did you get your equipment back?
No, they took all the equipment, but we kept our studio and rebuilt it, got new equipment, and then we sent a signal to the internet to somebody's. A friend of mine had a little shack where he kept his lawnmower in his backyard, and that's where he put our broadcast antenna. And he just had to have a 10-foot fence with barbed wire on it, and so it was kind of protected. So they didn't bust that one. So we kept broadcasting, and then it evolved into an internet radio station. So I think we were on the air for 16 or 18 months altogether.
The only Indie Media Center I remember being actually shut down by the cops was Genoa. And I remember being on IRC, talking to everyone as it happened, and hearing them, like, seeing them talk, as realizing that the police had come in the front door, and they basically talked through each barrier the cops got through until they all disappeared. And it was just really harrowing. And then, like, of course, they were all arrested and beaten up. And we just had to continue the website and everything without anyone there because we lost everyone who was there.
So I'm going to kind of backdoor bring things to a close here so that we can go on to our next social event. But I thought, if you'll indulge, I'll read this one last line out of this article. Yes.
Ran in the Wall Street Journal the last couple of days. Headline, I think it's 20, was calling attention to, well, the U.S. has been down
because a lot of young people did not know about this protest and the role that it played in social movements since, and the way in which it defanged the international, you know, drug-free kind of organization. So I think it's a really important inspirational piece for young people organizing around the climate strike now.
Well, then following Seattle, of course, was Cancun, where you really had the coming together of all the different Global South countries to form an alliance to block the U.S., and that was the point where the U.S. started moving towards bilateral agreements, and you had, first the bilateral agreement with Chile, I think, was the first one that came out of that push to try and move away from having a global body and to be able to, like, pick them off one at a time. Well, again, if you'll indulge me, to paraphrase Voltaire, if there had not been an Indymedia Center, it would have been necessary to create one. As we celebrate the 10th, at that time, anniversary of the founding of Indymedia in Seattle, all of contemporary journalism should look back at the road that led us to where we are today. The elements of participatory journalism, people given voice to help shape how their stories are told, this is truly what democracy looks like. Be the media.